This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 78.
If you can find out what your accessory dwelling unit laws are in the locality where you are, but you'd be surprised at how you can increase the density and increase the rents in a given like lot area. And that's where you'll see the biggest value increase, especially when it's legal.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione. Let's get to today's episode. Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today's guest is Quentin D'Souza, and Quentin is a multiple award-winning real estate investor and a trusted authority on real estate investing. He's an Ontario certified teacher and holds two university degrees, which includes a master's in education. Quentin has appeared on local and national television and radio, interviewed in national publications, and has been a keynote speaker to large audiences of real estate investors. Quentin is the author of The Property Management Toolbox, a how-to guide for Ontario real estate investors and landlords, The Filling Vacancies Toolbox, a step-by-step guide for Ontario real estate investors and landlords for renting out residential real estate, The Ultimate Wealth Strategy, your complete guide to buying, fixing, refinancing, and renting real estate, and The Action Takers Real Estate Investing Planner. This one right here. Really cool. Excited to talk about this stuff today. He also mentors real estate investors as the chief education officer of the Education for Canadian Real Estate Investors. Quentin, you have an amazing background. You've published some fantastic books already. I am super excited to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Of course. I was trying not to flub up that intro so much, but it was so much that you got going on here. It's amazing. I want to talk a little bit more about that. So what I like to do on the show as the first question that I ask everybody is if you can elaborate a little bit more on your story and just tell us how it all got started for you.
We came to Canada as new immigrants. I actually was born in Fiji, the Fiji Islands. We came over and I've been in Canada since 1978. We started with nothing, left a little apartment, grew up, worked as a dishwasher when I started out, a hotel, just did a bunch of different jobs all over the place. But I was really interested in my own business, but my family's business was teaching, really. My mom was a teacher. Her mom was a teacher before that. So I got into that. I went to school for it. I have a master's in education. I was on track to be a school principal. I have my principal papers. And in 2014, about 20 years of teaching, I left teaching altogether to focus on real estate and real estate investing. And that's what I've been doing since 2014. I tried a number of different things. I did like websites. I used to have a landscaping business. I had tried stock option investing and a bunch of different things. And what really stuck with me is that the real estate, it always did well over time, especially the way that I was purchasing properties. Started off with 1 to 4 unit properties, you know, and then 2015, I started buying apartment buildings, 6-unit building, 9-unit building. Now we're buying 30, 40 unit buildings up to, we're approaching about 400 units now with 80 million in assets under management in Ontario. And yeah, I'm just getting going. I feel like I'm getting started.
That's amazing. Yeah, just getting started. I think you got started on an amazing journey from the time that you moved to Canada. So actually, I want to talk about that. So you went through this entire pipeline to basically become like a school administrator. And in 2014, decided that I want to do something else. I'll be my own boss, be an entrepreneur and everything like that. So now in 2014, is this when you started trying all the different businesses, or is that when you finally decided real estate was the one to go?
Well, I had before that, like from, I don't know, forever, I've always tried different things out. I'd tried consulting, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But by the time I got to 2014, I had started investing in real estate in 2004, but it really wasn't until 2008 that I started to buy 3 or 4 properties a year. And then by the time I got to 2013, I could quit my job, but I was really nervous about doing it. I had 2 small kids at the time and my wife, and we were, so for a year I practiced being self-employed. So I actually, instead of taking money from my paycheck, I was taking money from the real estate assets. And then I was practicing not having a job for a year before I did quit my job. So I probably could have done it a little bit earlier. And yeah, once I did that, I quit and never looked back. I started to take on different types of real estate strategies, but I was always, from 2008 to 2014, I was buying properties that needed work, fixing them, refinancing them, and holding them. So I think you call it the BRRRR strategy now, rebranded by others. It's been done for decades. So that's all I did. By the time I got to 2014, I was making about $5,000 a month in cash flow from my real estate assets. I had also been purchasing like single family homes, converting them into legal duplexes, and then again, refinancing and holding. I was working with partners as well. In 2008, I worked out the model. In 2009, people were seeing what I was doing and they wanted to partner with me. So I was also picking up partners along the way. And so they wanted to bring the money, I would do everything else, and then we owned the properties 50-50. And that's exactly how I built out the business. And then when I got to 2014, I had more than enough cash flow to leave what I was doing. And then it just scaled from there. I went a little crazy.
So you didn't start investing in real estate in 2014. That's when you got yourself to a point where you had enough passive cash flow that you can leave your 9-to-5 and be a full-time real estate investor. So when did you, like, rewinding back, when did you actually start? So I know in 2008, 2009 is when you were converting those single families like into duplexes, which, by the way, that is fantastic. And I want to dive a little more into that too after this question. How far back does it go when you first started?
My first property was in 2004, but I only bought one property and I was scared crapless. Like, and you know, I didn't know what's going to happen. The market was going crazy. And so I didn't do anything. Like, I was frozen for 4 years. And then in 2008, I started to relook at all the things that I had invested in and what really worked and what didn't work. And real estate had really worked. Even though there was a change in prices and everything that happened, it still worked really well. And so at that point in 2008, that's when I decided to start scaling it. So then we bought 3 properties that year, and then the following year, 4 properties, and then kept scaling from there. And at that time, you got to remember the type of loans that we were getting in 2008 were, for us, they were like 5% down or even 100% finance retail rental properties. You couldn't really do the same in the same way today as what we were doing back then. And so when the financing rules changed, that's when I started to talk to mortgage brokers and lawyers and different people. And I figured out how I could buy it, take some short-term financing on it, refinance it, and then hold it. And as long as it cash flowed positive on the refinance and I was able to pull out a majority of the funds, I had a ton of investors and I had the ability to do it myself as well. On the home runs, I would tend to do a lot of those myself. If I pulled out maybe 50% of it, I would do it with a partner. So it worked out really well. Everybody was happy because of the returns. And the partners that I had back in 2009, I still have today, except now we're doing apartment buildings together.
So they started off small with you as well. So it wasn't like a whole new set of eyes. Like they built up at the same time you did. So that's that type of relationship, that type of rapport that you build with somebody over years, starting off so small and scaling to where you guys are today, that that helps build that trust that you have with these partners. So that's pretty awesome. Like I said, I wanted to dive a little deeper into what you were doing with converting some of these single families into duplexes, because when I don't know how, like what the rules are in Canada, but here in the States, sometimes that could be very difficult to do, especially with getting it approved by whatever county or state that you're in. Each state is different with different rules. So how did that work? Like when you, so would you look for a particular property that you knew you can like partition off and change it into a duplex? Was it like a upstairs, downstairs, like a top and bottom, side by side? Like how did you work this out?
So like everything you said. So whenever I look at an asset or I look at a property, I always look to bring it to its highest and best use. So highest and best use means if I look at a single family home, can I actually bring this to a higher number of units? And what I would look at is it zoned, first of all, for higher density. Could it be zoned? Could I put in another unit in? Could I put another two units in? Could I put it like three units in? What could I do to bring this to a higher density? Oftentimes, I would put a basement apartment in. Sometimes we would have an addition on the back where we would have another unit. Sometimes we would do an addition on top. So we would top up and then have a new unit on the top and have a common stairway from the bottom floor all the way up. And then the main floor would have another unit. So it just depended. I don't know how many I did. Like over 25 of those type of conversions. And I was also flipping houses too. When I quit my job in 2014, I actually flipped like a dozen houses. And I wish I kept all of them now, but because it would have been way, like I was, what I was doing is I was doing that highest and best use. And then I was selling them afterwards. I would make like good money on it. Like, I would make sometimes like six figures on the flip, which was awesome. But what ended up happening is I quit my job and then I gave myself another job, which was flipping houses. So I felt like I took a break for 2 weeks and then I was bored. And then I got the flip project. So I was doing that for a year and then I stopped doing that. And I focused on the apartment buildings and still I was doing like smaller projects with partners, but most of the time I was getting into bigger units. But those now you see a lot more accessory dwelling units. Now you see garden suites or laneway suites, just different ways, because every municipality like across, it seems like North America is looking for ways to increase density. And if you can find out what your accessory dwelling unit laws are in the locality where you are, it's you'd be surprised at how you can increase the density and increase the rents in a given like lot area. And that's where you'll see the biggest value increase, especially when it's legal, because then the lender can use both rents or like three unit rents, whatever it is. And all of a sudden you got an asset that's spitting out thousands per month instead of hundreds per month. And that can really change what you're doing, right?
It's funny because here in Hawaii, to convert a property to a duplex, triplex, anything like that, it's very difficult. There's not many legal, like small multifamily properties here. However, they are making it like changing the laws to make it for ADUs to make it much easier to get approved and start adding ADUs onto properties, because Hawaii does have like a housing crisis right now. So they're looking for different ways to get more affordable housing. And ADUs is one of those solutions where you can build like a smaller unit that you can rent out for more competitively priced for somebody to afford living there and be able to support themselves. So stuff like that. And then we also have these, we call them Ohana units, right? So this is where you take a single family home and you're renting out a portion of your home. And it's not quite a full duplex or triplex or quadplex or anything like that, because you can't have the full kitchen or anything like that. There's different things that you have to make it so that it's not a full like unit. It's mostly meant for family, right? So you're sitting there and you have family members come live there. That's why they call them Ohana units. Yeah. Finding out like what the laws are in your local area is super important. So I'm really glad you pointed that out, because it's going to be different everywhere. And I wrote this down, what you said, because I thought this was fantastic. You were looking at these properties and you said you wanted to look at whatever that higher and best use would be for those properties. And I think anybody looking at any type of property as an investment, you always want to look at what the highest and best use is going to be for that property. You should always go into it with a plan. We always talk about like having multiple exit strategies. That's one of them, is like, what's going to be the best use of this? And if that's not going to work, what's the next best thing? So as long as you're strategizing and you're trying to figure out, you know, what it is that's going to work for you and your situation. And in your case, you're focused on cash flow. So you're looking at, how am I going to maximize this cash flow from this asset? That's pretty awesome. So now, going from there, in 2008, 2009, you started to do these and you started to bring on these partners, right? And when did you decide you wanted to start scaling up to get into like larger commercial multifamily, right? I think we talked about it a little bit, but I don't think we talked about the time frame. Like, when did that transition start to happen for you?
It's actually when I stopped needing to need like money to eat and live. So when I stopped needing to have the cash flow from the assets, and what I was shifting away from was working on that, but working on net worth goals. So actually looking at an apartment building, I see an apartment building for me more of a way to give myself a piggy bank that I don't really need like to take from today, but later on I'm going to be taken from. Maybe it'll be like in a refinance in 3 to 5 years, or repositioning the asset enough so that in that 3 to 5 years, once we do the refinance, then I'm going to start pulling cash flow from the asset. So I looked at it from a different perspective than I looked at the 1 to 4 unit property. Now, what I'm often doing is I'm looking at my 1 to 4 unit property, and I look at it as a return on equity, because I still have cash flow now coming from a number of different sources. And I look at it from a return on equity perspective. Can I take the equity out of this asset and use it in a way so that I can gain more cash flow or better leverage from it? And we don't have the 1031 exchange in Canada. When we have to sell an asset, particularly a 1 to 4 unit asset, we're doing a capital gains. Like, we have to pay capital gains on tax on it. But for me, when I do, I'm okay paying that tax, because what I'm doing is I'm taking it, repositioning it into a higher, like an asset where I can get better leverage. I can get a larger asset that's going to give me more cash flow than what I would have had if I just kept it in the same asset that I was in before. And I think that what you're going to find in the US is, if they ever get rid of the 1031 exchange, you're going to find more people moving over to a larger multifamily assets, because instead of selling the asset, people will hold it for a longer period of time and just continue to refinance it over and over. So they'll get the same effect. They won't get their initial investment. They'll get their initial investment out or profit out, but they won't sell the asset again. So I think that's, you know, maybe something that if you're thinking about I'm always thinking about different scenarios in my head, like what's going to happen if, what can I do if? And when I talk to some of my friends in the US, that's what I'm saying. We've only had that option. So this is how we deal with it here. So this is maybe what you're going to see over there, because that's what happens here. People hold on to apartment buildings for 20, 30 years all the time, because right. It makes no sense to sell it and take the gain like every 3 to 5 years. It makes no sense. So what you would rather do is refinance it, hold it, and then continue as long as you can.
It's funny, because I wrote that down as you were talking, when you said in Canada, you guys never had a 1031 exchange. And to myself, in my head, I said, I wanted to jump in, but you were going. But in my head, I said, we might not have one for long. Yeah, that's a great point, because what happens when that does go away? A lot of people that are going into these like larger commercial multifamily deals, you have to start rethinking strategy, right? So you're not looking at this 5 to 7 year turnaround anymore. Now it's probably going to be more of a long-term hold focused on the cash flow of that asset, that to make sure that it's still a good investment for all the parties involved. I think that's important. And the other thing, as you're talking about what you were doing there in Canada, right? It's the same thing, right? You knew that these capital gains taxes were coming. So you had planned for it. So you knew, you know, how much you were going to be paying, how much you'd be getting back once you sold the asset, how much you can reinvest, how much you should put to the side. Like, that's all part of your strategy. So I think the biggest thing is knowing what those steps are going to be and taking the right steps in your own strategy to take down the next asset, or as you're selling an asset and things like that. And I think this is a perfect segue into what I want to talk about with your book, because when we're talking about taking action. And so, yeah, shameless self-promo for you right here. But I want to talk about this because I really like the way you put this together. I got a chance to take a look at this, and thank you for sending it to me. But right up front, the book is sitting here talking about how to plan, how to, you know, effectively put this plan together to take action. And then on top of that, in the back of the book, as you get further on, because it says investing planner, right? It's got the whole planner back there. So yeah, the book explains to you how to do it, how to use the planner, and then boom, here's the planner, go do it. So for anybody that's looking to get themselves in a situation where they're ready to get started, this might be a good first step. Because like I said, when I just sat here and perused through it, and I'm very new to the, you know, multifamily commercial real estate realm myself, this was it's pretty eye-opening with the different steps that you should be taking, due diligence. Like, it's talking about everything, right? Super important. And I want to talk about that a little bit. So if you could share with us your book, like, why did you put this together? What were like some of the lessons learned that helped you like culminate all this data together to create such a good planner?
It actually comes because I've taken a lot of coaching from different people over the years. So I was part of Dan Sullivan's strategic coach program, Pro Coach out in the East Coast in Canada. I'm part of the Entrepreneur Organization. They're all different places where I've gotten insights on how to plan better and plan as a business owner. And I've spent like thousands on that over the year, over the last, since 2008, 2009, I've been using all of those systems. I actually used to coach people in real estate investing. So I had a $40 million portfolio at the time. And what I would do is I had group coaching clients, one-on-one coaching clients. I'd have 12 clients that I charged like $700 a month, and then one-on-one clients that I charged like $1,500 a month for an hour a week. And I used one of the strategies here, which is on sources of income, right? On page 24, which is I had these different sources of income. And for most people, when they do the sources of income kind of calculation, they'll have their job as the one that has the most income. But what happens with business owners, if you create different streams of income, if you don't want to do one anymore, you can just cross it off and that's it. It's not going to affect your life in the same way as if you had to cross off a job. And so in January this year, I stopped coaching altogether. And what I did was I put all the templates that I was using in my coaching program into the book that I was using to help people to plan out their how they grow. And it was the same stuff that I've been using. So I actually have 10-year goal. I have quarterly goals that are up on my wall beside me, and I have a weekly plan that's beside my desk too. And I've been doing it for like over a decade. And this is basically how I've been able to continue to grow my real estate portfolio and also other goals too. Like I've had health goals that I've been able to accomplish as well as family goals. When I've been planning this quarter, one of my goals is some intergenerational pieces because my boys are getting older. And so I needed to get some primary, secondary wills done. I wanted to get a trust done. So that's one of my quarterly goals this quarter. And it ties into my 10-year goals. So I do a lot of the like planning, even my weekly goals, they tie into my quarterly goals. So all of that kind of plays together. Now, and I don't do annual goals. I know it may sound a little different, but I don't plan annually for anything. I do 3-year goals as the closest to my quarterly goal. And what I find is by doing that, I'm actually able to achieve my 3-year goals in what most people would think would take a lot longer to do. And it's just the way that I plan, because I do quarterly and then 3-year goals and then my 10-year big picture planning. And that's worked really well for me. In the book, I outline all the different tools that I've used. So I make sure that the people that I was coaching, they actually track their net worth, because if you don't know what your net worth is, how are you going to grow it? So twice a year, they'd identify roadblocks that you run into as real estate. There's always 3 roadblocks. It's finding properties, funding properties, or financing properties is where everybody runs into problems anytime in real estate investing. It gives you strategies on how to work on that every week and how to overcome that in order to grow and do what you want. I mean, that, like I was mentioning to you before, I closed on that $40 million asset, 202 units over 7 buildings. I raised in that month in June this year, I raised $9 million for all my projects. It wasn't just that project. I also closed on 2 other apartment buildings at the same time. So there were like, there was a bunch of things that I did, but that all came from all my planning from before. It's not like I just did it. Like it took time to get to that point. Like I created the relationships. I always work on finding funding partners every week. Like yesterday I talked to two partners. I'm always working on that as part of my weekly goals. And that helps so that when you get to that point of needing the funds that you're ready to go.
Yeah. Going into all of that, when we talked about earlier, when we talked about like finding the highest and best use for a piece of real estate, I want to kind of transition this into finding the highest and best use for your plan. So if you have a 10-year plan and you're sitting here putting it together, how do you find that highest and best use? How do you make it so it doesn't stagnate, right? So if you're looking 10 years out, you've got 10 years, these goals that you set a decade out, what do you do to make it so that you don't fall off the wagon on the way? Because 10 years is a long time.
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com. What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Buzzsprout. The Average Joe Finances podcast recently switched over to Buzzsprout, and I got to say, I am super happy with the progress. Our podcast is now on every single major platform and reaching audiences that we couldn't reach before, which is just super awesome. So thank you to Buzzsprout for being such a great platform. But also I want to say, hey guys, if you sign up for Buzzsprout and you sign up for one of their paid plans using our link, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card. So go check them out. It's averagejoefinances.com/Buzzsprout, and we'll make sure the link is in the show notes below.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, it's very true, but you'd be surprised. So, for example, like when I did my 10-year goals in 2018, because what happens is when I get to my 3-year goal, then I go back and I look at what I've already achieved. And sometimes you achieve what you were going to do in 10 years in 3 years. So one of those goals that I had was a health goal. I had decided that I was going to run a marathon, and I had put that in my 10-year goals in 2018. And I was really not healthy in 2018. As part of my quarterly planning, I added a health goal, losing 20 pounds a quarter, you know, and I had to focus on getting that done. I lost over 100 pounds over about a year and a half of
wow. Work.
Yeah.
So that's impressive.
Yeah. And I started off with a 5K marathon, a 5K run. I did a 10K run. I did a half marathon. And then I did a full marathon all in a year. And I had that as a 10-year goal, but I achieved it in a lot shorter of a timeline. But the thing was, when I had written that goal down, I had spent about a day thinking about like 10 years from now, blue sky. Like, what do you think? What do you want of yourself? What do you want to be able to do? What do you want to say? One of my goals is a traveling goal. I want to make sure that I'm traveling at least 6 weeks a year. And I'm not working on my business. I'm traveling 6 weeks a year. Just before 2020, so 2019, I had done 8 weeks of traveling the year before. You'd be surprised at what you can achieve if you put that goal down and you're only working on towards that goal every quarter, every 90 days. And yes, you would have to readjust, because sometimes like the goal doesn't make sense anymore. Like you don't really want to do that anymore in 10 years. But at that 3-year point, when you get to your 3-year goals that you've done, you can go back and you reassess your 10-year goals. And you can say to yourself again, hey, do I still really want to do that? Maybe I don't want to get my pilot's license anymore. Maybe I don't want to buy a yacht, whatever that is. So because we change and evolve as people too. But planning, I think like mindset is very important. It is really important. But planning, I think, gets underrated when it comes to this. And if you plan well, I think you'll achieve well. And that's why I wanted to have the planner as out there, because that's how I helped all my coaching clients. And it's what's really helped me to achieve what I've wanted to do. And so I wanted to put it out there for other people to be able to use. And hopefully you put the karma out in the world, you get it back. And I like hearing from people who use it and then let me know about it and connect with me. Like I'm on like social media and people can connect with me. And I love hearing about, I get messages sometimes on Facebook and on Instagram from people who have read the books or used it. And that makes me feel great. Cause like, once you have like income for yourself and you have net worth and you have intergenerational wealth, what's really more important to you is the impact that you leave on the world like after, and then what you do, right? And how you, I want my kids not to be like, I want them to be able, I worked hard when I was young too. I had 3 paper routes. Like I used to do like a lot of different stuff, and I want my kids to work hard too. I don't want them to be given anything. And I also want them to be able to give back too. We do a basket brigade every Thanksgiving, and we're just helping families and we're putting together baskets and delivering it. So like we do different things to help them, but really it's the impact that on the world that you make that makes, I think, a bigger difference. And there's a real great book that I read recently that really changed my mindset. It's called Die with Zero. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's by Bill Perkins. It's getting all you can from your money and your life. And it sounds a little like it's a mindset shifter book, which I like really for me was right. Impactful. So anyways, I go all over the place. Like I'm like a,
it's okay. I'm sitting here taking notes, and it's funny because one of the things you said, like before you even said the word impact, I was already writing that down, because as you were describing the effect that your book's having on others, you said you got yourself to a point where, you know, your net worth is up, your cash flow is good, like you're in a good spot. So there's not really much else out there to give you like that type of like satisfaction or gratification, but going out there and be able to impact others is huge. But before I talk about that, I want to talk about what you were talking about before that. So that mindset shift, right? So it's not about just having a plan. So it's about having that mindset. And those are the two most important things to crushing anyone's goals, right? Is to have a mindset, have your mindset in the right place, but to also have a plan to get there. So that's one of the things, the exact things that you're talking about with what you're doing provides for those that are doing it. Because when you're reading the first couple chapters, like if that doesn't help shift your mindset towards what your goals are, I don't know what's going to do it, unless it's a book like Die with Zero, which I'm going to go look that up. That sounds amazing, because mindset is something that I preach about on this show all the time, because that is one of the biggest things that you have to change in life, no matter what your goals are that you're trying to accomplish, whether it's you're drowning in debt and you're trying to get yourself out of debt to even get started investing in a journey like that. You got to flip the switch first. You have to change how you're spending your money, how you treat money, treat your relationship with money. All those things need to change before you can even start trying to attack any goals. So that mindset shift needs to happen first.
Along those lines too, like a couple of books that I would recommend too, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book is like a given, right? For absolutely anybody who's in real estate. So my kids have both read that. But the other one that I've given them, and I like, it's like a book that I really like, is that the Top 10 Distinctions Between Millionaires and the Middle Class by Keith Cameron Smith. I don't know if you've heard of it, but no. Again, it's another like one of those big mindset shift books. And it's like, I put it in there with like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like for a shift. But it's also just big themes, I think. And it's explained in an easy way. So my kids really got it when they read it. So it's another one for mindset that I would recommend for sure.
That's great. So there's actually a book that I'm having my kids read. It's called How to Turn $100 into $1 Million. It's a kid's book on how to build a business or how to, you know, properly invest in assets to build your wealth and cash flow. And what's really neat about it is like my kids don't really, they maybe need to get a little bit older. This is more of a, probably a good book for teenagers, but as they sit here and read it, I can sit here and explain things a little bit to them. But I'm sitting here reading it and I'm like, wow, this is, if I didn't read like Rich Dad, Poor Dad or other books that helped me like think this way, this would be a good book to start off with. And it's a kid's book and it's really good. But just things like that, teaching children right now, and this is like going a little bit off script here, but like teaching children financial literacy is super important for our future generations. And one of the things that I'm trying to build here with Average Joe Finances is financial literacy. This is like one of the biggest things. So bringing guests on like you that can sit here and explain your story, explain how you immigrated to Canada from Fiji with nothing, and you were able to build this life that you have right now and build a different life for your children and building this generational wealth and things like that. Yes, I want to build generational wealth too, but at the same time, I want my kids to know how to do it. I don't want to just say, okay, here, I leave this inheritance to you. No, I want you to go out and work for it. I want you to become your own self-made, you know, millionaires and things like that on your own. I want you to have the knowledge and how to do that, because you'll see a lot of these kids grow up, or these inheritance babies, that they get this inheritance when they're older and they blow all their money and then they're broke and they don't know what. So you never know what's going to happen in the future. Certain things can, there could be like a huge crash and they can lose everything that I had invested my entire life, whatever. But if they know how to start at ground zero and build themselves back up, they're going to be okay. And I think that's super important, is that everybody learns how to do this and gets that. It's a basic knowledge. You don't need to be an expert in every single thing. You just need to understand compound interest. You need to understand cash flow. You need to understand what an asset is versus a liability. Just simple little things that once you really get that down and you got the basics down, you can really start to build something that will take a life of its own. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of went off a little bit on a tangent there, but I think that as we're discussing this, that's one of the most important things, is having that knowledge and having that financial literacy. And yeah, so over to you on that.
No, yeah, it makes sense. The other thing is that I'm being able to work with teams and work with other
Absolutely.
People, right? Especially if you're going to go into commercial or multifamily or anything like that, being able to be somebody who takes a component of an entire thing, do what you do really well, and let other people do what they do well and pull that all together to make it work. Then you have a business, and then you can do things differently. You'll be able to scale differently, and you'll be able to have different things, because you're just doing things different than what most people try to do, which is be like the expert in everything. And they try to do every different component of their business, and it's just not scalable. You can't scale yourself to the ability to that size. You become self-employed again, rather than own a business or be an investor in somebody else's business. Like, right. And that's you want to avoid. And you can do it like I did it. Like when I started back in 2014 and I started flipping houses again, I was self-employed. But I can't, like, you know, unless I turn that into a business, which is very possible, but I didn't do that. I was self-employed, right?
So, and you would do that by outsourcing and being able to take your hands off the throttle a little bit yourself. Because that is, yeah, that you don't want to go from your W-2 and your 9-to-5 to just working full time again, when your whole goal was to get yourself financially free to just go and live and enjoy life. Otherwise, you're sticking yourself back in that same scenario.
Yeah. And then, and making sure, like for me, that's ensuring my kids understand that too, and know that there's other possibilities other than just working for somebody else. And I don't think that's conveyed enough to kids, that they don't, that there are other opportunities that are out there for them if they decide to go down that path. They don't have to be an employee in somebody else's business. You can create something small and maybe start as an employee in your own business, but remember that you need to transition out of that. And one of the reasons why I like real estate is that there's so many different types of opportunities within it to be able to do that. You can start off with flipping houses, or you can start off with being a realtor and taking commissions and then using those commissions to put into something else. Or you could be a property manager, own a property management business. Like, there's so many different things within that you could do. And so for them, it's trying to convey like the different opportunities, as well as the mindset of being a business owner versus and it's nothing wrong with being an employee in any business. But if you want to scale and grow something, you have to change that mindset. And that's what we started on that conversation.
Yeah, it all comes back to that. It all comes back to mindset. We've talked about a lot of great things here. We've talked about cash flow, how to build your cash flow. As we're talking about these other things, like, those are all just benefits of changing your mindset and planning and creating these goals for yourself. That's a side benefit. So the first step is, if you can change your mindset and you can make a plan, you'll reap the benefits on the side without even knowing how you got there. You'll know how you got there because you planned it. But what I'm saying is, that's just one of the side benefits, right? You get yourself to a point where you've bought these assets, now you're cash flowing, and you're sitting good and happy. And it's all because of a simple little thing like shifting your mindset and making a plan. And actually, I'll also throw in there too, educating yourself. That's huge. Learning about what it is you're trying to do instead of just trying to dive right in. So I definitely don't recommend that. Don't just say, okay, I'm going to get into real estate. I'm going to go buy this property right now without doing your research on it and educating yourself. So that's super important. This has all been super fantastic. And part of building that plan too, like I said, is this awesome book right here that I got in front of me. So for those of you listening, definitely go check it out. I'm going to make sure I have a link to that in the show notes as well. Quentin, okay, is there any type of like last tips or tricks that you would recommend for somebody that's just getting started out and they want to get themselves to the point like where you're at and say, hey, I want to build my cash flow so that I can just go live life the way I want to in the future and be financially free?
Sure. I'm not that special. Just so you know, I'm just like an average person, average Joe. I think the difference is that maybe I decided to actually take action and do it. And I planned it out and worked that plan. But really, anybody can do it. You just have to change your mindset and then you can change your life. And if you can make the plan, but carry out the plan, I think that really one way to accelerate it is just find other people who have already done it before in your area. Like technology has changed so much and there's so many more places that you can go. There are local meetup groups that you can go where all you have to do is find somebody who's 20 years ahead of you, find somebody who's 2 years ahead of you, because then like they're willing to share with you what they've been doing because they're happy that they've done it. And so for example, if you're just starting off, find somebody who's bought three properties and has got $500 or $1,000 a month in cash flow and just buy them lunch, go out and talk to them, figure out what they've done, see if you can help them, see how they might be able to help you. Because when you create a relationship with somebody like that, then you're going to be part of their circle. And that's how you improve yourself, by your network. So there are lots of different kind of ways that you could do that. There's so many meetup groups that you could, where you can find. The problem is if you came to somebody like me and you were going to ask me like tips on financing, I'd be like, go talk to your mortgage broker or go talk to your, you can't approach me in the same way as you would approach somebody who's just a year or two ahead of you. And that's what you want. And then as you progress, you're going to find that group changes and you'll be different. So for me, like I'm in a group of investors across Canada. And one of the guys just picked up 1,000 units in, like over the last like quarter, right? For me, I'm like, oh man, I'm small. Like I'm just getting started. But it's that group that you're with that makes you feel like that and also pushes you to do a little bit more too. So if I were to give anybody a tip, that would be the tip. Go find other people that already done what you want to do. It doesn't have to be too far much ahead of you, and then go do it with them.
First of all, that is a fantastic tip, because I've had other people on the show too say something very similar, right? Go find people that are where you want to be at in the future, but nobody ever said, hey, go find somebody that's maybe 2 years ahead of you. So somebody that's gotten to just like their first couple deals when you're just getting started out. That is significant. And I think that will help people like with your comfort level, right? You're not going to want to go up to somebody who's got 100 million in assets under management and be like, hey, can you tell me how you did that? Because that was so long ago for them in their journey that it's like things are different. Things have changed since then. You want somebody who's got more of the recent experience that's just started building to go there and pick their brain, because that's going to give you the highest and best use of that information. Because like you said, if somebody was to approach you and ask you how to go and finance a property or get a loan, the stuff you did when you were starting this off was 100% financing or 5% down. Like you don't have those opportunities anymore. Things change. So definitely you want to get somebody closer to where you're at ahead of you. And I think that's fantastic advice. Like I surround myself with people that are way better than me. There's some people that are just a couple years ahead of me. I have this huge circle. And I think that's super important that you build your network, right? And you start collaborating and you start building these relationships with the people in your circle. And then that circle starts to tighten and get closer. Some of those people in that tighter circle, they become partners in the future. So it's all about how you're building this up. So I think that was a fantastic piece of advice. Thank you so much for that. So I have one more question for you. And this one is really important, because the conversation we had was
absolutely amazing. People are going to want to know more about Quentin D'Souza. You said you're big on social media. You like to connect with people. Can you share your website, social media profiles, anything like that with us? And I'll make sure I have it in the show notes for the folks that are listening right now to go and find you.
Yeah. So if you like, I look on Instagram or Twitter on Human REI is where I'm at. Also on Facebook, you can look me up at Quentin D'Souza in Ontario, Canada. That's where you'd find me, or email me at Quentin, Quentin at getrealwealthy.com. Also, if you want to pick up the first chapter of the book, you can go to actiontakerrealestateplanner.com and grab the first chapter if you want to take it out for a test drive.
And after you read that first chapter, you're gonna want the whole thing. So we'll make sure we have a link to that too. Quentin, this has been an absolutely amazing conversation. I truly appreciate you connecting with me and coming on the show. I'm humbled that you decided to come share your knowledge with us. And again, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
All right, we're out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decision.